out to the phones we go. Jim Margulis, SB Nation, Southside Sox joins us, and we're going to talk the Chicago White Sox rebuild. Jim, got to ask you this. Do you think the White Sox scored a big enough haul in their deal with the Yankees?
It's definitely the most underwhelming of the big deals that Raycon has made so far, although, you know, with David Robertson and Todd Frazier, I just don't know how great their markets were. Canely, I think, is the real deal, you know, that I think Blake Rutherford is mainly about Canely, and then the other deals are just kind of ways for the White Sox to clear salaries and players they need. I mean, like a rebuilding team does need a closer. Todd Frazier is a free agent at the end of the year. Market for both is limited, given Robertson's contract, given Frazier's contract, given that there weren't many teams looking for a third baseman. So I think it was kind of more of a deal of convenience in that regard.
Were you surprised that they couldn't get a little bit more in light of what they got for Adam Eaton, number one, and number two, that they actually had to take money back from the Yankees in the form of Tyler Clippard?
Well, I think, answer your second question first, Clippard, I think, serves a purpose on the White Sox. The White Sox bullpen right now is one, very tired because, you know, they've lost, they traded Quintana, they lost Chris Sale. They have a lot of starters who are not able to get through five innings, so there are a ton of innings to pick up. They don't have anybody because of injuries that really can step up in the closer role, so they get Clippard, who's a veteran who's been there before. Even though he's not having a great season, he's like at least another body in the bullpen, and he's somebody who can at least, you know, he knows all the roles, and he has experience closing out games and such, even if he's not the guy you'd ideally want doing it. So, you know, that's a little bit of salary coming back from the Yankees, but it's also a player the White Sox needed in the short term just to help Rick Renteria a little bit. So, and then, you know, talking about the other deals, just, you know, Robertson was getting paid fairly, I think, and Frazier was getting paid fairly. When you talk about Eaton and Sale and Quintana, they were all way underpaid. They had these favorable team-friendly contract extensions. They allowed teams to solve problems both for the immediate future and for three, 4 years down the road. So I think, you know, when you have Frazier, who is an impending free agent, you have Robertson under contract for one more year and probably in his decline phase, it seemed like there just wasn't the kind of surplus value that you'd see from, you know, the other guys. And so that's why I think that the trade return was, you know, kind of underwhelming.
I think that's fair. Who do you see on the move next for the White Sox? Deadline's about 10 days away, give or take. And there really isn't a lot left for them to move, but do you see a couple of pieces they might move as the deadline approaches for some prospect talent, some that's close to major league ready and some that's a little further away?
Well, I think they've used up their big chips. So I think you won't see any kind of, you know, a blockbuster deal, but there will be players to be moved. Anthony Swarzak, he's having a very good year out of the bullpen, and he's going to be a free agent after the end of the year, so there's really no reason for the White Sox to keep him, even if it's for, like, a lottery ticket, you know, some kind of A-ball arm that's intrigued them in the past. You'll probably see him moved. Melky Cabrera is having a typical Melky Cabrera season. There just isn't a whole lot of demand right now for corner outfielders slash DHs. So I think the market for him has been a little bit quiet, but, you know, say if there's an injury, or I think in August, perhaps, you know, as teams look to shore up their benches or maybe look to block another team from acquiring a, you know, extra bat like Cabrera, I think you might see him on the move there if nobody gets hurt and no kind of needs open up before then. Those are the two. And then, you know, perhaps say if Derek Holland turns it around or Miguel Gonzalez turns it around, they're both free agents after the year, they could be moved in August deal. So I think you might see more activity in August now than July.
You know, take us through this farm system. I took a quick look, but you follow this club every day. And what's on the major league level is not exciting. It's what's in the minor leagues that's really exciting. And kind of take us through this farm system and talk about its strength, you know, as far as the guys that are ready to hit the ground running in 2018. And then some of the guys that are a couple of years down the road, you know, just kind of take us through the flavor of this farm system. Is a lot of it ready to break now, or is this rebuilding process very, very far away for the Chicago White Sox?
Some of it's ready to come up pretty soon. I mean, Yoan Moncada was just called up. He's the centerpiece of this whole deal, and I think the White Sox called him up at the appropriate time. He could have theoretically started the season in Chicago, given his talent and such, but, you know, they played a little bit slow. They let the, you know, service time thresholds pass and Super 2 thresholds pass, and, you know, he battled a hand injury in the middle of it. So I think, you know, he's back on track, and now is the right time to call him up in terms of his development. So he's there. Reynaldo Lopez, starting pitcher, you know, hard-throwing starting pitcher. He was with the Nationals last year. They got him in the Eaton deal. He should be called up pretty soon. I'm actually surprised that he's not up already because of the starting pitching problems. You know, he's not maybe the best bet to, you know, start throwing, you know, gems right away. He might be kind of a guy who struggles to get through five, but basically that can be said for the entire White Sox rotation. So I think Lopez, you know, now starts would, I think, benefit him and the team. So he should be up. Right now, I think the immediate future is all about starting pitching. You have Lopez, Lucas Giolito. In Double-A, you have Michael Kopech. He is the headliner, but Jordan Guerrero is a bit more advanced. Spencer Adams is a bit more advanced. Kopech is still pretty raw. He's got the big fastball and slider, but he's still kind of figuring out how to pitch with it. But they have a number of starters they can kind of go through and evaluate over the next year. And I think right now, when it comes to like their elite hitting talent, they have a couple of guys in Charlotte who, like Nicky Delmonico and Raimer Liriano and Willie Garcia, guys who have had intriguing seasons but don't really figure to be kind of guys who are expected to be starters. That's more an A-ball. You have Eloy Jimenez, who they got from the Cubs for Jose Quintana. He's pretty much, after Moncada, the number one hitting prospect in the system. They have Blake Rutherford, who they just got. He's an A-ball. Zach Collins, who's had a rough season, he was their number one draft pick last year. Jake Berger, their number one draft pick this year. You know, both college hitters, advanced approaches in A-ball. They could theoretically move up quickly if they, you know, figure it out this year, or at least at the end of this year, they could be somebody who can move up quickly. But I think right now, the first part of the movement is going to be all about pitching and just kind of evaluating these bench players slash fourth outfielders slash potential surprise starters. But I think that the centerpiece talent for the position side is all going to be in like 2019, 2020.
Fair to say, unlike the Yankees, who their rebuilding project came together very, very quickly, and it's actually paid dividends this year ahead of schedule, the White Sox are not going to be a year ahead of schedule in 2018, and for that matter, 2019. You're not really going to see dividends on the field as far as wins and losses. This is really all going to start to take shape sometime around 2020.
Well, 2019, you know, I'll say 2018, I would say, is off the board. 2019, you know, with that huge free agent class that, you know, I think a lot of teams are going to be looking at, and the White Sox having pretty much no contracts on the books at that point, they're in a position where they can be kind of a sleeping giant, especially if they feel great about how their position players are lining up and can really start to shape out a, you know, a functional diamond on their depth chart. You could see them make a big, you know, maybe, you know, even two additions, you know, from that big free agent class. So, you know, depending on how it breaks, you know, remember the Cubs when they signed John Lester, that was a year before everybody thought they were ready to start kind of loading up, but the timing was right, the pitcher was right, and they got him, and that certainly accelerated their timetable. And I think, you know, you might see the Sox in a similar position where they have money to spend. There's going to be no better way to spend it than that particular free agent class, so they might go all in on it, maybe a year earlier than the talent dictates, but they could also kind of add wins before people think they're going to happen.
So you actually think, you know, if they feel they're on the cusp of something because of how little money they'll be spending on contracts, you could see them getting real aggressive, load up, and bring in some real impact free agents?
I think so, especially, like, say, if it happens to line up with a position where, for one reason or another, the rebuild just hasn't addressed, whether, you know, like, say, for instance, it's a, well, not second base, but I'll say, like, you know, left field or, you know, first base if Jose Abreu is iffy or catcher or, you know, they need extra starting pitcher. You know, they might look at what they have and say, we're pretty much like 90% there, you know, in 2020, but we're not going to have this guy. You know, that's where you might see the White Sox spend big because, you know, that would just take care of it. And then they wouldn't have to, you know, either rush or trade or try to hope for a miracle in the minor league system.
Are they going to take, you see them taking big advantage of Rule 5? When you're not a team that's competing and wins aren't important at this point, when you have systems like the Yankees that are loaded, you know, is this a situation where they could take, I know their system's loaded as well, could they take advantage of Rule 5 and add some pieces that aren't protected on other teams' 40-man rosters?
I think so, at least for one more year. They did that this year with Dylan Covey, a starter, or at least, you know, a pitcher out of the Oakland system. You know, they claimed him. He made a number of starts. He's on a DL now with an oblique strain. But, you know, they started him, and he had, I think, 8.12 ERA. It was pretty rough. And he didn't look like a starter, but he might be a bullpen arm at some point. And I think they're going to be able to keep him. So I think, you know, given that Covey, you know, has that, you know, or the White Sox are able to carry him, I think certainly that'll apply for next year. Because they're, you know, you mentioned the Yankees, and part of the reason the Yankees dealt some of these guys like Polo and Clarkin is because they had to be added to the 40-man roster. They have a 40-man roster crunch. I think the Astros do. You know, a number of teams who have loaded up these farm systems do have players to unload or risk losing. And I think the White Sox can at least make one addition to the Rule 5 or from the Rule 5 draft to their 25-man roster without really having a stretch to keep them.
In our final 45 seconds or so, the fan base, how patient are they going to be with this rebuild? You know, obviously, each of the last couple of seasons, the White Sox have kind of come in and tried to get younger but also win now. And they've kind of finally abandoned that. And they said, you know what? It's full-on rebuild. We got about 30 seconds left. Do you expect patience from this fan base as this rebuild comes together?
It's been better than I expected so far. After the shock from the Sale trade and the Eden trade, I think fans were, you know, there was nowhere else to go. So the rebuild has been, you know, more or less embraced. I think the television ratings suggest that a lot of fans are just finding, you know, other things to do this summer, and they'll check in later or they'll check in sporadically. Moncada's debut got the top ratings of the season, so I think as these exciting pieces come along, they'll at least kind of stoke fan interest and kind of keep it afloat until this, you know, until waves of talent come along.
If they're smart and we got to let you run, what they'll do is what they did here in New York last year when the Yankees acquired all those young guys. A lot of cut-ins on the Double-A team and the Triple-A team and a lot of updates on those minor leaguers. That'll actually get ratings up during a rebuild.
Yeah, they get Triple-A games on the Chicago broadcast.
Smart move. Jim, can't thank you enough for a few minutes. Let's do it again soon as the 2017 White Sox season unfurls in front of us, and we'll look ahead to 2018 and beyond as well. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.